Hi, everyone. This is Dr. Cheryl Selman, and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me for another opportunity to get empowered with truthful information so you can make the most informed decisions possible regarding your health and well-being. You know, nobody can tell you what's right for you. So the job really is to gather the information, distill it, do your homework, and then come up with a decision that not only is based on your research, but also on your intuition. So you need to bring all those pieces together so you can make the best choice for yourself, for your family, and for your community. And for those of you who are listening for the first time, I welcome you to What Women Must Know. I invite you to go over to my website, which is whatwomenmustknow.com. I have an opt-in page there. I have many free special reports. I have a range of articles, and my radio shows get emailed out to everyone on my list, so you can listen to them at your convenience. And also go over to my Facebook page, which is also What Women Must Know, because I make daily posts of information that I think is really important, be it articles or interviews or recipes, whatever I come across that I think would really help empower you with truthful knowledge. So please like me over there as well. Well, I don't know how many of you are aware of a huge controversy swirling around, not just in the United States, but actually overseas in places like Australia. There is a major debate occurring about the role of vaccinations. And like so many issues, we enter it with very little knowledge, or at least real truthful information. We have a lot of misinformation. We certainly have a lot of propaganda driving these really important issues. And it has kind of taken a bit of a fever pitch these days because we are now facing many states in the United States that have it before their legislature to mandate vaccines to children with no exceptions. There used to be the opportunity to have exceptions to vaccinations, and you can be exempt for religious purposes, for medical purposes. All that is about to be taken away, or at least there is an attempt to take it away in many of the states. And then we have countries like Australia, where the Prime Minister has just announced that if parents do not vaccinate their children, he will withdraw subsidies that the state provides to families with children, and that amounts to about $15,000 will be denied to any family that does not vaccinate their child, which is, you know, I don't know what you would call it. I would call it tyranny, taking away personal liberties, personal freedoms. Anyway, so what is really going on here? And many of you have listened to previous interviews. I certainly did a very extensive, enlightening interview with Dr. Andrew Wakefield several weeks ago, trying to illuminate the situation for people. And today we're going to be hearing from a mother who actually has experienced what it's like to have a vaccine-injured daughter. Let me just say a little bit about Karen Kane. She is an author and parent advocate for special needs families. Karen has become a beacon of light, carrying on an inspiring message with purpose. In her memoir, A Unique Life Fully Lived, A Personal Story of Love, Hope, and Courage, Karen has written a mother's loving tribute to her only daughter in her search to create a full life for Lauren. Wheelchair-bound from 6 months old from a bad vaccination reaction, leaving her quadriplegic with daily seizures, nonverbal, blind, and only able to blink. Yet Lauren lived to 15 full and unique years. She shares how she was forced to set goals and made decisions to create a life without boundaries. The book describes the unique and extraordinary life experiences that Karen created for Lauren and the soul connection between mother and daughter that continues to this day. Lauren lived a full life best friends, slumber parties, horseback riding, overnight camp, Girl Scouts, and attending the school prom resplendent in a pink satin gown complete with tiara. She swam with dolphins, participated in the school play, and she and her canine companion won first place in her middle school Halloween dance contest. In documenting their victories, challenges, and sorrows, and sharing the tools and skills she learned to navigate life's journey, Karen's story is inspiring and resonates deeply in the hearts of everyone. And I want to read a testimonial here from Karen's book, which is A Unique Life Fully Lived. And this kind of sums up the story here. Karen Kane is the epitome of the word mom, especially when it comes to working with a disabled child. Her story, the story of Karen and her daughter Lauren, is one of the most endearing, heart-wrenching, life-altering stories anyone can ever experience. Karen's willingness to be open to and participate in the most unbelievable possibilities will move even the most jaded heart. And when I read the book, it was so moving, it brought me to tears. As it does anyone who reads the story of Lauren's life and what Karen did to support her child in the best possible way. And Karen has become an advocate now for parents with disabled children from vaccine injuries, and she has a lot of important information to share with us today. So it's my great pleasure to welcome Karen Kane to the show today. Hello, Karen.
Hi, thank you so much for having me on. And as you said, this is a very busy time, and I'm really excited to talk to you about what's going on with my journey with my daughter and also vaccine awareness and the rules that are happening in this country and other countries.
Well, I'm looking forward to our interview. And as I said earlier, I think that this whole vaccine issue is very emotionally charged, but we don't have many of the facts straight. And we also haven't really been exposed to the millions of parents who are dealing with vaccine-injured children. It's almost like they're in the shadows right now, and they should be in the spotlight because this is what we're fighting for. We're fighting for our children. So to begin our conversation, Karen, why don't you share the experience? Tell us your story with Lauren.
Well, it was April 27th, 1994, almost 21 years ago. I took Lauren in. She was 6 weeks of age, and she was born totally normal, and her Apgar was 9. Took her in to the pediatrician, and the pediatrician gave her Lauren's one and only DPT vaccine. And 2 hours after the vaccine, Lauren had a 5-minute seizure, and then 2 hours after that, Lauren had another 5-minute seizure. And immediately I knew that my life had changed. Lauren continued to have seizures. I think for the first 2 weeks I didn't see any seizures, but then she had another one. And the seizures were long. 5 minutes is a long time for an infant to convulse. I found out that Lauren had a hot lot, meaning that 30 kids had seizures or worse with the same vaccine number that Lauren had, and there were 10 surrounding deaths in her lot. And Lauren, by the time she was 3 months old, she had 9 of those 5-minute seizures in one day, and her body was just lifeless. Of course, when you have severe brain damage and your brain is convulsing, you know, she didn't make any childhood gains. It just started a flurry of doctor hopping and drug pushing and trying to stop the seizures were our first concern, and we just never really were able to get the seizures under control. Dr. Minkes told me one time that she was one of the worst seizure cases he had ever treated, and before she was a year old, I asked him, I said, what's going to happen to her? And he said, one day you're going to wake up and she's going to be dead. And so Lauren had severe brain damage from the vaccine, so she, you know, in the very early years, I was like every other parent, and I wanted to, you know, fix and heal her, and my focus was on that. And modern medicine, you know, they were really just prescribing. We looked at her brain, and it wasn't one focal point, just the entire brain was damaged, and so there was nothing we could really do. And, you know, I was just doing everything I could as a parent to give her the best opportunities. You know, I did all the neurology, you know, and all the doctor's appointments, but I also did healthy foods. You know, I was giving her organic food, and we were doing cranial sacral therapy, was doing massage and energy therapies and just everything I could do to give her the best life possible. But, you know, back in 94, there was no internet, so I was not connecting online with parents who were going through vaccine injury or anything. I actually started writing letters to people, and I connected with people around the U.S. who had lived with brain injuries or brain damage, or they had kids who were born, you know, with an injury. And so I started connecting in that way, but it wasn't, you know, till years before I was able to connect with people online. And I was very broken, and I was very alone. I was very isolated. The government immediately agreed that my daughter was vaccine injured. We hired the only attorney in California to present our case, and the court issue is a whole other topic of vaccine injury. We presented our case, and the government immediately wrote back and said, yes, we believe that these injuries were caused by the vaccination. And it took them 3 years to settle with my family. They kept putting off our lawsuit because by the time Lauren was 3 years old, she almost died. We spent her third birthday in the hospital with double pneumonia, and her lung collapsed. She had a chest tube, and she was very, very sick. And really, she probably should have died on that day. And she lived for 15 long years, and we put her in a coma twice to stop the seizures when she was three. In 1998, we spent 171 days in ICU. From 3 to 5, basically, we lived in the hospital. And then at that point, when she was 5 years old, she was in a wheelchair. She was cortically blind. She had a feeding tube, and she breathed out of a hole in her neck. And once we kind of gave her the trach and allowed her to breathe, and when she got sick, we were able to treat it, she became, you know, healthy. She was always medically fragile, but she wasn't living in the hospital. And then, you know, we started having fun in life. But, you know, our story is really the story that you don't see, as you said, because doctors don't want to talk about vaccine injury. And really, doctors aren't even taught in medical school about vaccine injury. The only thing that doctors are taught in medical school is about the vaccine schedule. And then after they graduate and become a doctor, the only training they get is from the pharmaceutical companies.
So I have a couple of questions. Let's go back. So your daughter was perfectly normal up until she had that vaccine at the age of 6 months. You said that she was one of the children who was exposed to a hot batch. What does that mean? What was in that batch?
Okay.
Do you know?
Sorry,
do you have any idea what?
Yes, I do. She was injured at 6 weeks, not
at
6 months.
Oh, 6 weeks. I'm sorry.
Yes.
Six.
No.
Wow.
Yeah.
So she was, yes, because they give these vaccines to such vulnerable infants who don't even have an immune system developed at 6 weeks.
Absolutely. And, you know, by the time she was 3 months old, I was, you know, giving her Dilantin and Phenobarb in her applesauce, where most babies are still breastfeeding.
Wow. Lauren
did have a hot lot, and it was filled with mercury. So in our medical records, you can see thimerosal written all over it. And there were 30 reports of seizures or worse, and to VAERS, Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System. And the VAERS system is the doctor should be reporting if there's a vaccine injury, even if it's redness, swelling, crying, fever, and the parent should be reporting. But it's basically understood that only 10% of vaccine injuries are ever reported. And what the government does, and they allow the drug companies to mail when they have a lot number is a batch. So if I was going to work and I was mixing a vaccine, I started mixing the vaccines and then I went out and went to the bathroom or whatever and came back, that would be a lot. The government protects the drug companies, so we don't know if there were 30 in the lot that Lauren had or if there was a million in the lot that Lauren has. That is not, we're not privy to that information, and the drug companies also scatter the lots when they mail them. So the 30 people who had vaccine injury were not at my my daughter's doctor's office. They're scattered throughout the U.S. They're in Hawaii, Utah, Minnesota, Chicago, all over. So no one doctor sees all of the reactions, which, you know, seems very unethical, but that's how our government protects the drug companies, and that's how the drug companies, you know, get away with this. And also, when you sue, you do not sue the drug companies. You sue the trust, because they, back in 1986, they revised the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program. And what they do is they tax you. So on the DPT vaccine, there's $2.25 that I pay when I buy the vaccine, the consumer pays, and that goes into a fund because they know that people will be injured. So there's no question, and they say that it's an unavoidable risk that children will be injured. So they created the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, and that $2.25 goes into a fund, and the government manages that fund. And what people don't really understand is that, you know, so there's billions of dollars in the fund. They've settled, you know, millions of dollars to families, you know, like mine, who actually win in vaccine court. Most don't. And they also take 25% of that money from the fund, and the government can use it for whatever they wish. You know, if they want to go to war, if they want to build roads. So they're making money off of vaccine. They're telling us to vaccinate. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just the same as the Fox Garden penthouse.
So it's really important to have people understand this, that the drug companies, I mean, they made a mistake with your lot. Is that there was some error in what they put too much mercury into your hot lot there? Is that what you think happened?
Well, you know, of course they'll never admit it, but the fact that there are 10 surrounding deaths states that something went wrong with that batch.
Right.
And the government, of course, doesn't like the word hot lot, you know, but that's what it is. And so, you know, there's just a lot of problems with that. You know, one, that, you know, the possibility, they say that that's an unavoidable risk. They know that children, you know, there's going to be a bad batch, but the government protects the drug companies, so the drug companies don't really care what the batches come out. I mean, of course, you know, ethically they should care, but they don't get sued. So there's no recourse for the pharmaceutical companies.
So the drug companies are not accountable in any way, shape, or form for any injury and damage caused from their vaccines. They are cleared. They will never have to be responsible for anything. And
So the
monies that get paid out to vaccine injured children, if you even win the case, and I know it's like, you know, going to a witch trial, the way they conduct these things, and they just really attack the families and try to have the, you know, I guess, you know, invalidate the claims that these families are making. So if you're able to get through the millions of dollars, and there's been over $1 billion awarded, isn't that correct? $1.5 billion have been awarded.
Yeah, I don't know exactly the dollar amount, and I was bullied by the government going through the lawsuit. I have a friend who spoke with 83 families who have settled in vaccine court, and none of the families she spoke with had even a remotely neutral experience. You know, and they know that. You know, back in 1998, when we settled, we went through, you know, almost 3 years of you know, litigation, even after they agreed. So they immediately said, yes, we know your family's injured. But then they pushed it off because everyone, all the doctors, all of us thought that Lauren was going to die. So if she had died,
they wouldn't have had to pay.
They would have had to pay $250,000, period.
What
we went through, basically, I had no idea at the time because I just thought, you know, they were there to help. One, they try to prove me a bad parent because, you know, they just attack you. It becomes, you know, me versus them. Lauren's life is not important. And then the only place in the United States of America where you do not get due process, okay, due process means that you have the opportunity to go in front of a judge and have a jury of your peers. So we all think anytime we go to court, we can say, yes, we want to have a judge, or we can have private litigation. The only place in America there is no due process is in vaccine court. So I don't even have the opportunity to take my little girl in her wheelchair with her oxygen and with her trach and present my case to a judge and jury. It's all done privately, so nobody sees it. So you don't get, you know, because, I mean, how often do we go to court and there's pictures and there's, you know, that's how we raise awareness, isn't it, by what we see. So they do their best to hide families and to bully families like my own. And it's terrible. I mean, I speak just about how I was treated in a vaccine court. There's a very good book that Wayne Rohde just wrote, and it's called Vaccine Court. And it talks about just the tragic, you know, the second insult to families when they go through vaccine court. And most people, you know, the majority of people who ever file in court, you know, they don't ever come back and say, yes, we agree. That's why Lauren's case is so unique.
Right. And I didn't know that 25% of all the money in that fund, which the government controls, you know, people are paying to it's really all of us contributing to the payouts for these vaccine injured children. And again, as we said, the drug companies have indemnity. They don't have to do a thing to take responsibility. And that 25% of all that money, the government gets to put their hands in and play with and do whatever they want with it, which is, of course, they have a lot of investment in keeping that fund growing and keeping it present and making sure not too many people get their hands on it other than them.
Pretty scary. I mean, you know, there's always that question of motivation. And especially now when we see that 54% of our children have chronic illness. So that means diabetes, seizures, ADHD, autism. Our kids are sick, and we have the highest vaccination rate. We have the highest infant mortality rate above 40 other industrialized nations. You know, so, you know, you can't really look at my story and turn your back anymore because our kids are sick. And the last year, in 2014, we stated that 1 in 68 children has autism, but that actually is not a true statement because they only look at children 7 and older. So when you extrapolate that down to your two to 3-year-olds, it's 1 in 18 has autism. And so if we do nothing right now with things the way they are, not even talking about the new vaccines that they have online, by 2025, 1 in 2 children will have autism. And that should be on the news every day. We should all as people.
Yeah. That's terrifying. It's just, you know, it's like, oh gosh, you know, the I call it the matrix that the world, the culture we live in, that's based on power and control, which is running the show. You know, this is a startling statistic, and I think people would be shocked, as I'm sure my listeners are, to hear that. And I have another question I wanted to ask you. So when you had the opportunity to do the scans or the MRIs, whatever they did to look at Lauren's brain, and you said the wasn't just one area of the brain that was damaged, it was throughout the brain. What does that mean, Karen? What actually did you find when you assessed her situation?
The entire brain was affected because, of course, at that time, you know, she was a baby and, you know, we did everything we could possibly do. And the medical, you know, all the tests, everything, it just showed when they looked at the MRI, her entire brain was affected. And as, you know, her myelin, as she got older, there was, you know, and I'm not a doctor, but, you know, what I was told is just that the entire brain is, you know, infected.
Inflamed? Was there inflammation?
I guess it was inflammation. There was just no focal point, meaning that there wasn't one specific area that they could remove, or, you know, sometimes people cut the brain in half. And so there was just nothing that we could do except really medicate. And Lauren had, most of her life, she was on 6 anti-seizure medications, still having uncontrolled seizures. We had a vagal implant put in her at one point, and then at the end of her life, we did the ketogenic diet. But in the beginning of her life, we couldn't do the ketogenic diet because by the time she was 2 and 3, the doctors, Dr. Minky, who was just brilliant, he said that it would kill her. We did IVIG treatments. We did steroids. I mean, you name it, Lauren's been on it, and she tried it. And she just always had seizures, and that really was the reason that she died. When she was 14, she just started having seizures that would last, you know, a week. You know, sometimes at one point, at Lauren's teenage years, she was probably 13 years old, I gave her 8 mg of Ativan in a two-hour period. And at the end of her, in November, a month before she died, the doctor in the ER said to me, he goes, she was just starting to have, you know, she was having a seizure for days. So I'd give her an mg of Ativan, 2 mg of Ativan. She'd wake up and go back into a seizure. And the doctor told me, he goes, I might kill her with this medication. And I just said, but she's going to die from this seizure. So it was terrible. And it was very painful. And, you know, people always turn their backs when they see Lauren and when they hear the story and they think, this will not be me. But I travel around the U.S. and I speak with Abilities Expo conferences, and I see more and more children like Lauren out in the community, and they have all these autoimmune issues. And when we look back at the history of what we're putting in our vaccines, and then we look at what's happening to our children, I just don't think there's a mistake that our kids are so sick, and I don't think what we are doing is working. And, you know, mercury is a huge part of the problem. And, you know, we just all watched Trace Amounts, which is a very informative movie. I suggest everybody watch it before, watch it today, watch it before they vaccinate, a flu vaccine or whatever vaccine they're using. Watch it before they put this into our children. You know, right now at 6 months, we're putting 9 vaccines into a 6-month-old baby. And I hear, because, you know, I get firsthand, I get messages and emails, and, you know, I had a family a week ago say, my baby died, and I had another child, and because nobody said anything to her about the vaccines causing it, she vaccinated the second child, and the second child died. I have, you know, the tragedies that are happening and destroying families around, in the U.S., that's mostly, you know, I get written to from all over the world. And, of course, the Australian thing, you know, I was just written from a group in Australia. You know, people are afraid, and I just strongly suggest that parents spend as much time researching vaccines as they do when they buy a cell phone. People are going into this blindly, and they're looking at research that is put together by pharmaceutical companies. You know, I suggest, watching the movie Bought. I suggest watching, you know, the Trace Amounts movie.
I have another one to recommend, and it's The Vaccine Nation, which is now freely available on the Internet. It's a documentary by Gary Null. And it's a really well done as well. So there's Trace Amounts, which is the new documentary that's just come out. There's the documentary Bought, which is pretty, it awakens people, which is the goal, as does Trace Amounts. And then there's Vaccine Nation, which is free online to watch the entire documentary. All of those will change your life forever when it comes to understanding vaccinations.
Absolutely. And, you know, there's no reason that people don't get informed. There's plenty of books. You know, I wrote, my book is, you know, really a love story. It talks about how I was treated by the vaccine court. And then the book Vaccine Court, you know, there's just tons of people, the Thinking Moms Revolution and VaxTruth.org, VaxTruth.org has great statistics. And parents just need to really educate and read the inserts, because the doctors aren't even going to tell you. But if you look at the flu insert, it tells you that it's never even been tested on pregnant women, and doctors are telling pregnant women to get the flu vaccine. It's become a very scary time, and it's become about money. This whole measles epidemic, as they call it, just completely makes me crazy, because the year before, in 2013, I think there were 404 cases of measles, but yet our, you know, 108 cases this year seems to be, you know, being called an epidemic. And at the same time, we had 9,000 children who were diagnosed with autism. So really, where's the epidemic? And, you know, this is supposed to be, you know, Autism Awareness Month. And it's a disgrace the way our families are being treated. And we all will be affected by this. When our children, 1 in 2, have autism, and they cannot work, and they cannot provide, and they cannot support our country, this this is going to, you know, it's already devastating, but everyone will be affected. Nobody will be able to turn their back on this. And I was listening to RFK Jr. speak the other day, and he said that $2.6 billion are spent from pharmaceutical to the lobbyists. And the reason, you know, people don't believe this because it's not on television. And the reason it's not on television is because $5.4 billion goes to advertising from pharmaceutical companies. And so I actually was called by PBS, and they wanted to put me on a commercial just about my attitude of living with a child who had multiple disabilities. We talked for a long time until they realized that Lauren is vaccine injured, and then that was the end of that conversation.
Yes, so, you know, we don't really understand to the degree we have been propagandized to, that the information we get through mainstream media, even PBS, you know, even y'all, our public radio stations, it is part of the propaganda campaign. I listened to the morning show with Diane Rehm. Now, Diane Rehm is a pretty level-headed person. She does a great show. She tries to create all different angles of things. I have to say, I was so disgusted at that show because she went on the attack against any parent that would not vaccinate. And she had all these industry-sponsored doctors on attacking, you know, the people who object, attacking Dr. Andrew Wakefield. It was like a kangaroo court. I could not believe it. And there was not one person, no one called in, no one objected. There was no one on that panel that even questioned, could there be a concern that needs to be addressed? So it horrified me. And that at that point, I realized how much the media is controlled and how much we are controlled. You know, it's the only word I can come up with. So there is total control and domination of the message.
I realized back when we were going through this vaccine, my experience with the vaccine court, I realized ever since then that, you know, I don't watch the news anymore. And I know for a fact that I've been asked numerous times to come on television. And then I said, you know, I'll say, do you know who I am? And do you know what happened to my daughter? And yes, yes, yes. And they'll call back and say, if I have you on my show, I will have 100 lawsuits on my desk. It's our health has become about money. And you know, if you watch TV, what do you see? You know, they're spending billions of dollars on paying for what we see on television. And I've been producers have talked to me, and they've told me, I can't have you on my show. I know what you've went through. I believe it, and I'd like to, but I'll lose my job. So we can't, you know, we have to rely on parents to share this information. And my one friend said it perfectly. She said, when someone comes up and tries to talk to me about Dr. Wakefield with my kid on my hip, I tell them, if you want to have this conversation, give me 2 hours, because this is not a five-minute conversation. And Dr. Wakefield is a hero. And, you know, what he has done for our children, at any point he could have walked away. And, you know, this all started, these attacks just started over a Lancet paper. But, you know, it really shows other doctors that if you speak out, we are going to ruin you. And, you know, there are some doctors that are willing, you know, to share their voice and share information. And, you know, there's doctors that have given up their medical license because they know this has become about money. And, you know, it just scares me. It scares me a lot when I see these families that are so you know, they're destroyed. I mean, it destroyed my family, certainly, and took my daughter's future from her, and, you know, this happens all the time. My story is not so unique now. When I spoke in Sacramento last year, there were 50 people who came to see me speak, and 6 families had more than one child with autism or vaccine injured.
Well, that's heartbreaking. So Karen, what do we need to know about vaccines, and do we? What is your position? All the what you've gone through, the research, the investigation, all the people you've talked to. What's your conclusion about vaccinations?
Well, ideally, you know, people always say I'm an anti-vaxxer, but I wasn't. I went in first, and that's what I did first. until I saw what happened to my daughter, until I saw the way the government treated me. Now, you know, I know that if you do nothing, if parents do nothing, then just to read the inserts of the vaccinations. It's important that people know that this schedule that we have come up with has never been tested. They'll take a pertussis vaccine and test that, and they'll take a tetanus vaccine and test that, but they don't test them all together. And now, at 6 months old, we're giving 9 vaccines into our infants that aren't even, you know, they're just barely starting to eat. We have 2.4% of deadly allergies, and, you know, I just don't think this is working. Ideally, I would love to see a green vaccine. But I don't think when we put mercury and aluminum, formaldehyde, aborted fetal tissue, and all, and, you know, live monkey tissues into our babies, into our body, even as adults, I don't think that that's the way forward. And I think that we must make the pharmaceutical companies liable. You know, I honestly, it blows me away that we as a people will look at what's in the vaccines, look at the schedule that we haven't even ever tested, and then you know, of course, look at the Amish community. They don't even have autism. Look at even our adults. You know, how many people do you know that have fibromyalgia, you know, MS, and, you know, the diabetes, all of this stuff. We are a sick nation. So I would love to see green vaccines. I grew up, and my uncle and my cousin both had polio, and their lives were shortened because of that. And, you know, I know what it's like to get sick, but a lot of the things that we're vaccinating for are not even serious illnesses. And, you know, I can't even talk about the Gardasil vaccine, because that's just such a disgraceful thing we're doing to our children. And, you know, in California, people probably don't even know this, but if you have a 12 to 18-year-old child, that child can go in and get a sexually transmitted, you know, anti-vaccine without the parent's permission. And California did this, I think it's AB 199 or something. They did this very tricky. At first, they put out that every child at school has to have the DTaP vaccine. And at the same time, they made it so that if your child can, for a 12 to 18-year-old, cannot get a library card, but they can go and get a vaccine without your permission. So the Gardasil vaccine is 4 vaccines, and I have my dear friend, her 14-year-old daughter, was in the nurse's office in California schools, and the nurse is telling her, if you have sex, you're going to die, and you need to get this Gardasil vaccine. And this is what's happening in the nursing offices, and they want to give this vaccine to boys. And, I mean, just Google Gardasil injuries and, you know, see the results of that. I mean, you know, it's completely out of control, and I think that our health care has become way more about money, and, you know, we are being bought as, you know, Americans, and I think in other countries. But I think that getting the GMOs out of the food and cooking your own food and the Roundup, you know, I think it's killing us. And now, you know, we're poisoning the planet. I mean, if you look at trace amounts and just all the mercury and all the other areas, and, you know, these are neurotoxins that we're injecting into our children. And the proof is in the pudding. You know, our kids are sick. And, you know, whatever you believe, even if you want to give a vaccine, I think that you would still want to have choice.
And, you know, that's the point. You want to have the personal freedom to decide what's best for your child and not have things mandated. I mean, the fact that in California they allow 12-year-olds to make a decision without a parental consent to get these vaccines is really very terrifying, and especially when they're pressured in the way that you described with false information. Because, you know, I did a whole, several years ago when the Gardasil vaccine issue was very prominent, I did a whole month-long series with Dr. Andrew Wakefield and other researchers around the world talking about how dangerous the Gardasil vaccine was, and it's only gotten worse. And of course, they're trying to expand its use and getting young boys and young girls, and there's just so much controversy about this vaccine. You know, in the Vaccine Nation, which is a really interesting documentary, they talk about the very origins of the vaccination, where it came from, which was this Dr. Jenner back in the 1800s who thought that he could take cowpox from cows and inject it into people and prevent it, people from getting smallpox. And then he, you know, he tried to prove his case by exposing children to smallpox with the vaccine. They never got it, except years later, 20 years later, they died of tuberculosis, which is a part of the smallpox variation of a theme. And so he, in the documentary, it really challenges the whole premise, do vaccines really work? And I think that is a really interesting question. We've just accepted vaccines and the associated dangers that go with them. But the question is, are they really proven? Has there been proven evidence that they are effective? And what we are forgetting in this conversation about vaccines, we're so terrified of illnesses that we lose sight of the fact that if we can be responsible with our diet, if we can manage nutrition, supplements, clean air, clean water, we build strong immune systems that have been designed to manage exposure to many of these conditions like measles. We want chickenpox, we want, because it creates a lifetime immunity, and only if we are not exposed and get it when we're adults does it pose a real risk. And, you know, the story is huge, and people have to spend some time, get educated, listen to interviews that are available on my website and my Facebook page, Sane Vax, through so many of the other vaccine the websites dedicated to educating people, and we'll go through them again, Karen, so people can take note. You will see that this is a story that is not being told. We're not getting honest reporting, so we can't make informed decisions. As I said, always start my radio show. We need to be informed. We need to get educated to make the best decision possible. If you don't get education, if it becomes an emotional issue, you know what's so interesting with Australia right now, so the Prime Minister is making this threat and saying that they don't want vaccinated children to be in the same school as unvaccinated children because they're afraid that it will harm vaccinated children, which makes no sense whatsoever, right? You know, if your child is vaccinated, they're safe. Why are you worried if they're unvaccinated children in the room? And it's an irrational argument. The whole controversy is irrational. It's based on fear and misinformation, and that's what we have to wake up to.
Absolutely, and we already know that vaccines don't work. And even half of the people that caught the measles at Disneyland this January, half of them were vaccinated. And what their plan, because they know that the vaccines don't work all the time, Merck is in a lawsuit right now because of the lies that they've told about the efficacy of the vaccine. They're the MMR vaccine producers, and we know that vaccines don't work. So the next step will be give it every year. And, you know, another great movie I missed was The Greater Good, you know, talking about that. And it is crazy. And if you look at the true statistics, hand washing back in the day, if you look at the grids of the diseases, they actually were declining before vaccines started. And, you know, that is where this has become just a huge money issue. And if we were honest, we would spend equal time going into these vaccine-injured families and see what they go through. I mean, I sat and had lunch with a woman who has three autistic, severely autistic kids. Her husband was thrown down the stairs and his ribs broken by their son. I mean, these kids grow up. These kids get big, and, you know, we have to quit turning our backs on these families, and we have to start supporting them. And, you know, people need to look at what's happening to our children. And, you know, and even Senator Pan was saying, we know that they are not always effective. So, and we know that people are being injured. And, you know, if you look at the research, you know that these diseases were, you know, being eradicated by hand washing and just, you know, the hygiene.
Sanitation. Yeah.
Yeah, it's completely driven by money, and we are paying for it. Our babies are paying for it, and you know, not even to look at all the deaths that have been caused from the flu vaccine and just all of these vaccines. I see it all the time. Families losing their children, and you know, and then they start doing this hepatitis B vaccine on the first day of life. All of this stuff just completely is heart-wrenching to see, because I see it and I hear from families and I know families, and you know, the SIDS and so many parents being accused of shaking their baby. I see these things all the time, and it just rips me apart. And you know, that's why I share my story and do all that I can, so people will realize, you know, you could be me. You could be sitting here and bearing your child or living with a very medically fragile child, because you know, you just can't, you can't turn your head anymore. You just can't.
So I have a couple of questions. Number one, can you tell us just briefly, what was the real story about this measles outbreak in Disneyland, as far as you know?
Well, I mean, I just think, personally, I think there is a plan. I don't think things just happen, because last year, you know, 2000, I think, and 14 or 13, there were 404 measles cases. So I think one thing leads to another, and there's propaganda, and then, you know, we make a big hype of everything, you know, and then half of these kids were already vaccinated. So that doesn't work. And I don't think anybody died from it. I think that, you know, when I spoke at the Senate, this woman was talking about how inconvenienced she was. And I just wrote something on KarenKane.com. You know, yeah, life is, children are, can be a huge inconvenience. And when they're vaccine injured, they're inconvenienced for the rest of their life. I mean, you know, it's just shocking that for a week her son had the measles. And I'm sure she was scared. And, you know, I have empathy for that situation. But when, you know, let's talk about, you know, I was inconvenienced. I had to put my kid in a coma twice. I mean, she had diarrhea at the end of her life four times a day. At 65 pounds, you know, it is messy. Life is messy when you have a vaccine-injured child. And I really believe this is just all hype, and this is part of this whole trying to take our vaccine, you know, trying to force children to be vaccinated. I think it's, I don't think it just happens. I think these are definitely calculated, and people thought a lot about this. And there are hundreds of vaccines that are in the works that they want to add to the schedule.
Okay, another question. Do you know how many of these children who've become brain injured through vaccines are now living in nursing homes? Where do they put these children who are so – you were a dedicated parent. Your child was quadriplegic. She was blind. She was, you know, couldn't walk, couldn't talk. You kept her home. You dedicated your life to her. What are other parents doing with such brain-injured children or severely autistic children? What's their option? Where are they going? Where are these kids going?
Well, I think that there's survival. I think that really, and because we had settled with the Vaccine Injury Compensation Program, the financial woes were not mine. You know, I had money. It cost me $220,000 a year to keep my daughter at home. And I knew there was only one hospital in the Los Angeles, in California, basically, that would take Lauren. And that was All Saints Hospital, and I think it was like $6,000 a day because of she was so fragile. Parents are surviving. I mean, and that's all it is, because most of the recovery for autism or vaccine injury is not covered by insurance. So my friends that can afford it, they spend about $64,000 a year on recovery for getting the toxins out for the vax, you know, that the vaccines have put into their bodies. People are just surviving. People are going crazy. There's a terrible movie that everyone should watch, and it's What Happened to Alex Spartacus. And, you know, there's a lot of tragedies out there that are happening where parents are literally losing their minds. I think most 95% end up in divorce. You can, my friend just placed her daughter, and, you know, but she, it's still just a huge financial commitment. And, you know, I don't ever judge people for placing their children. I think that we have to provide homes because we have to have a place that children can be safe and they can be cared for. Because, you know, what I did with Lauren was completely above and beyond what any person would ever do. And taking care of someone, especially when it's your child, as they grow older and all their medical needs, you know, it's very, very financially devastating, emotionally and spiritually devastating. This year I'm talking about caring for the caregiver because it's so important for our caregivers to stop and take care of themselves because this is very difficult. It's very difficult beyond the only people that can ever talk about how hard it is are people that who have cared for either, you know, an adult or their child. And people just survive. I really think that most of the time people just survive.
So let's talk a little bit about taking care of the caregiver. What would you like to, offer caregivers based on your experience?
I remember speaking at Lauren's funeral, which I wasn't going to, but it was a very, very difficult year watching her body, disintegrate. I don't know, she was just imploding. She was so sick. And I said, you know, support people who are caring for our children and adults. I think the best thing that I know that I did for myself was to get myself spiritually balanced. I went to a meditation group, and I think really that saved my sanity. I loved my daughter, but taking care of her was, it's like running a triathlon. You just never finish. It was, you know, it went from seizures to, you know, orthopedic issues and to, you know, heart issues and to stomach issues and bowel issues. And it was just, it always changed. And so I think that having a break, even sometimes if it's a 10-minute break for people who are caregiving, finding your sacred space and really just finding your spirit as you care for somebody, especially parents who are taking care of children. I know that I became a martyr, you know, in the very beginning, and, you know, who wouldn't blame me? I was going through a very, very difficult time, but it's easy to get caught up in the negative. And I loved my daughter, and my daughter was only about love. So she taught me that, you know, coming from love and taking care of my spirit as I took care of her was really the most important thing that I could give to myself. And the more I took care of myself, the better Lauren was. So I think that's such a critical thing, and it's the first thing that goes as mothers, as often mothers do this. Dads do it too. I know some amazing dads, but, you know, we drain ourselves until there's nothing left, and then we're angry and unhappy. And I really think that the mother is the glue that holds the family together. Typically, when the mother walks or the mother falls apart, the family falls apart. And they're, you know, again, that's just generalizing. There are some amazing dads I see these amazing dads, but I think typically, and just in my case, that, you know, I had to take care of myself. And me and my husband, you know, split by the time she was three. You know, we separated. And Lauren's father died in 2011, I think 2011 or 2009. And we just had completely different coping skills. Going into a support group is really, really important. And now, you know, there's so much online that you can't, you know, argue that you can't get out of the house. I think being in nature, you know, I try to offer people things that are free. You know, meditating is free. Being in nature is free. And finding that thing that takes care of your spirit, I think, is critical as we care for our children.
It's such an important message because if we don't do the things that let us take care of ourselves, as you said, you cannot function. You don't have your health. You don't have your emotional well-being. You are in total overwhelm, and you know, you're not going to be able to provide the care and the love and the time and the energy to your child. It's
a challenge. And I practice that today. I mean, every day I can wake up angry. I mean, there are things that make me angry, and I feel very sad when I see families being destroyed by vaccine injury. It breaks my heart. But I wake up every day and I go through what I'm grateful for. You know, I take time to meditate. I work with an energy worker so I can keep myself as healthy as
mm-hmm.
possible.
Mm-hmm.
And I have, my husband is very supportive, and, you know, we hike, you know, he's always like, come on, hike with me because you know you're going to feel better. And,
yeah.
you know, we live in a very small town, but it is so critical that we take care of ourselves. And I think a lot of times it's a choice. You know, my point is that, yes, I could be very angry that my daughter's dead, and yes, I could do this, but in the name of my daughter, I go forward with love because that's who she was. She was always about love. She had this huge faith in God, and I go forward with love, and I share our story so that people can know that, you know, you can really get through almost any obstacles. And we all have good days and bad days. You know, that's life. You know, whether you are medically fragile or the healthiest person in the world, you're going to have, you know, your ups and downs. But I think so much of attitude and your perspective really is everything.
So I want to just let people know we're talking with Karen Kane, and that's K-A-I-N. Her website is KarenKane.com. She's the author of a very moving book, A Unique Life Fully Lived, Personal Journey of Love, Hope, and Courage. And it's written by Karen and her daughter, Lauren. So, you know, please go visit Karen Kane's website. Karen, can you give some of those other links that are really educational links so people can learn more if they're curious, or places they can go to understand not only the issue but how to be supported? What would you recommend, and some of those new documentaries that are out and available?
Yeah, we talked about Trace Amounts, Bot, and then The Greater Good is a great movie. There's a lot of books out there. Wayne Rohde just wrote one about Vaccine Court. Another really good book is The Virus Versus the Vaccine, and that talks a lot about the polio vaccine and how they created that, and they knew that they injected 98 million people with cancer-causing agent SV40. The Thinking Moms Revolution, you can go to my Facebook page. I have A Unique Life Fully Lived and Karen Kane, and, you know, there are lots of posts there about this topic and what's happening in Australia. And I really encourage parents, you know, to just get educated. VaxTruth, VaxTruth.org, that is where I get a lot of my statistics. And I'm going to the Autism Trust Conference this coming weekend, going to Autism One Conference in May, and I speak with Abilities Expo around the U.S., and that's abilitiesexpo.com. So there's lots of information out there. I encourage parents to get supported, to talk about it, and to please share their story, and please stand up so we do not lose the right to what we put into our bodies.
So what, before we complete the show, what would you say your purpose and mission is right now?
I really just share my story to as many people who would listen so they will educate themselves to make an informed choice. Right now, I think we have to stop in every state the right to make that choice. I mean, that right now is what my focus is, educating people so they understand that this is just one of the many things that are going to be taken away, and they're going to just load up the vaccine schedule and, you know, to do the work and look at the fact that our kids are sick. So my focus is really on stopping us from losing our rights, because this is just the beginning of what is coming next.
And that's what's really frightening, what's coming down the pipe with all these other vaccines that are added to the schedule. I know that California is in the midst of a really, you know, controversial debate over whether they're going to mandate without exceptions to all children. Where can people who are listening from California, people who have friends from California, relatives in California, where can they go to lend their voice to oppose this bill?
They should write the California Senate. Senator Pan is the one who has started this bill. You can go to KarenKane.com. I just wrote a piece that I wrote because now I live in Oregon. I've been here a year and a half, but I've been in California my entire life, and that's where Lauren was injured and died. So California is very near and dear to my heart. But the Oregon, a lot of the states are going through the same thing. So with Senator Pan right now, to write to him, and you could just go to U.S. government. You could probably go on my Facebook page and see other links to, you know, just where they need to call the Senate. They need to call, you call your congressman, go in on every level and talk about this. And, you know, we need to make our voices heard. And just, you know, no matter what you believe, if you want to give your child, you know, a vaccine or five vaccines, what's happening is that we're giving 60 vaccines.
Right. I think this is time where people really have to take action and they have to have their voices be heard. And even if you don't live in California, you know, communicate to the Senate there. Even if you don't live in Australia, on my Facebook page, I put up a poll that I think it's the one of the newspapers put out that lists this issue. Do you believe that vaccines should be mandated? So even if you're not a resident of Australia, go up and respond to that poll. Say no. We've come to the end of this show, and I'd like to thank Karen Kane for her wonderful and committed work to this cause. You've been listening to What Women Must Know. This is Dr. Cheryl Silman. And remember, always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.